Well, hey there, and welcome back to Fire and Soul, the space to deepen your divine alignment and further activate your unique awakening experience. And I'm so glad that you are here on this planet and tuning into this show. You know, we haven't been able to put out an episode for the last couple of weeks, a little bit rare around here, but tis the season of just being at full capacity with so many offerings and programs and being at full service. But it hasn't stopped Fire and Soul from growing exponentially. In fact, I recently learned that this show is ranked in the top 1% of podcasts worldwide in the space of self-development. So that is because of you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing with friends and loved ones when you feel stirred, and thank you for DMing when you find value and want to connect on that. And especially thank you for sharing the reviews. That is the single most effective way to support the show as well as help grow the show. And so if you have not yet left a review, it would be so deeply appreciated if you'd be willing to do so right now. You can hit pause, and wherever you are listening on your podcast app, you can hopefully give us a 5-star ranking and then a written review. That written part matters. That's what makes it count. And then be sure to hit submit. And thank you in advance. That will help us reach more people, and it will also help us secure more of our dream guest. We've got a lot going on this year, and we're just getting started, and I'm thrilled about my special guest today, Mark Groves. But before I open that up, I wanted to let you know about a really cool invitation, especially since we are here in the realm of podcasting. And so, my friend, if you've ever thought about launching your own podcast, dreamt about it, talked about it, but maybe, like me years ago, you've gone to the Google bar and searched, you know, or seen all the different courses out there and feel a little bit more confused about where to start and who to trust now than even before that search, I totally get it. And that's why me and my co-founder of the podcast accelerator, Ms. Jenny Saraswati, who is the CEO and founder of Jenny Media, a top 3 podcast production agency in the USA, we've joined forces, and we have an upcoming free boot camp that I want to invite you to. This is going to be on April 10th. There's 2 different times. I'll leave the link in the show notes. But what this is it's called The Answer to Podcast Procrastination. And we're going to help you make the 4 key foundational decisions to jumpstart your podcast idea, including the name. We're going to help workshop podcast names with you live. And then the description, you'll be able to easily express what your show is about and who it's for. The format, decide whether your show will be solo, interview, or a variety of both. I do a variety. And then finally, your gear list, even for those super not techie like me way back and still not, you'll know exactly what you need to record on a budget that works for you. Honestly, if you can upload a photo from your camera onto social media, you can run your own podcast. I promise you it's true. We've produced over 600 podcasters into the world between us. And so by the end of this bootcamp, you're going to walk away with podcast clarity, know exactly how to magnetize your audience and dream guest, and be ready to step into the soundlight with confidence and ease. So if this piques your curiosity, I'm going to encourage you to head to the show notes and sign up and see us there on Wednesday, April 10th. And if you like a verbal URL, I'll give it to you now. It's thepodcastaccelerator.com/bootcamp. Oh my gosh, this is going to be so fabulous. All right, switching gears and moving into a conversation that I've been eager to bring to you for a while now. Mark Groves, many of you are probably familiar with his mega Instagram account called Create the Love. It's been around quite a while. It's got nearly 1.2 million followers. He's got a really popular podcast called Mark Groves with, I believe, over 20 million downloads. I've been a big fan of his for many, many years, but it was when he started speaking truth. I mean, when I saw that this man was on a very similar awakening journey like I was and like you are and like we are, I just knew that one day I had to somehow, some way get him on Fire and Soul podcast. And so I couldn't be more honored that that day is here. This is a conversation that was really originally planned to be around an incredible celebration for his upcoming book launch that he wrote with his wife called Liberated Love. And She was not able to join us at that time. And so we got to actually talk about some of the ways in which I have felt connected to him and wanted to honor him as a result of just being under his guidance and his mentorship, really, for all these years. I have been so deeply inspired and empowered by him over and over and over again. And he's making some really big, bold, courageous moves lately. And so few leaders are. And so just time and time again, I just continue to be moved by this magnificent soul. So for those of you who are not quite as familiar with him, he is a human connection specialist, founder of Create the Love, and host of the Mark Groves podcast. Mark's work bridges the academic and the human, inviting people to explore the good, the bad, and the downright ugly, and the beautiful sides of connection. This conversation is a beautiful weaving of many years of me getting to know him through his work. It feels like a beautiful journey that we're taking you on. It was intimate. It felt so real, so honest, so open. And I have no doubt that you're going to walk away feeling even more liberated from within so that you too can just feel so whole as you step onto your highest timeline. So without further ado, my loves, please enjoy this really special conversation on liberated love with Mr. Mark Groves. Welcome to Fire and Soul, Mark. This is such a pleasure and privilege to connect with you in this way and on such a momentous occasion.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm excited to be here.
Well, congratulations on your book officially being out. This is being released. When it is out, Liberated Love is now touching the hearts and minds and souls it's meant to. And I'm very excited to drop in all the way in that process and what it's like to birth a book. It's my understanding it's your first book, yeah?
It is, yeah. It's the inaugural.
You have a lot of birthing going on in your life. I mean, Jasper the Little, a new marriage, new podcast title and direction of content. I mean, there's a lot going down. How are you doing?
Yeah, you know that idea that everything comes in threes. I think this came in fives. You know, I'd say when you're swimming in the change, you know, you might as well just add more change, you know, on some level. I think like life's most stressful events are, you know, one of them is changing jobs. I think another one is moving. I've moved a lot too in the last 4 years. So, you know what? I'm doing great. At this point, I feel like the roots are starting to make their way into the ground, and giving birth to a book with my wife was actually a great preparation to give birth to a child, to be honest, other than the actual labor part, which I can't relate to. But the assimilation and the mixing of our ideas and our thoughts and our beliefs and our styles really led very well to how we're going to parent and, you know, what that means. And I look at him and I look at the book and I'm like, oh, wow, that's so interesting that the book was really the preparation, which was really beautiful.
We're going to talk about that process and when it started to come through that this book needed to be expressed through you and Kylie, your beautiful wife. And we're sorry that we didn't get to be with her today, but she's with us in spirit. I want to actually take it back and do some honoring for a moment of you and what you've meant to me and the impact that you've made on my life specifically. You released an episode on your podcast that was formerly titled It's Mark Groves Podcast, and it was titled Embracing Truth of August 22nd, 22. And I had actually just done something similar, and it was called Standing for the Truth I'm Here to Serve about a year earlier, but it was kind of crickets out there, right? Except for the ones that were being taken down and the cover of New York Times or whatever. It was just a really big fear that was, I think, holding many, many, many back from expressing their truth. And I want to read something that you shared on your podcast that stopped me in my tracks. Literally, I had to pull over and cry because I was feeling into it. It moved me so much. And you said, I tried to separate Create the Love and It's Mark Groves. I thought I could live in both worlds and feel whole. I thought I could stay silent over in one place and get louder in another. I had become the very decision I was hoping to heal. And then you made the conscious choice, the very brave and courageous choice, to merge your two worlds of Create the Love and then known as It Smart Groves. And I imagine all the communities and all the weavings and threads. I'd love to just talk about that for a moment and what that experience was like for you, for those of my viewers and listeners that aren't as familiar with maybe that particular episode or that defining moment, because I believe that it has everything to do with where you are now and choosing to take this stand. But before we open that up to you, I just wanted to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for speaking your truth in such a powerful, clear, fortified way that it gave me more permission to fly my wings and to soar even more. And for each of us, it's different, right? Right? The evolution of our consciousness and our bravery and all of that continues to reveal itself the more inspired steps of action that we take. But it's a courageous act. So what was that like for you, or that defining moment of no more, I've got to merge these and take the risk of losing maybe some, but whatever wasn't aligned wasn't meant to be. I know you know that.
Yeah, you know, it was, I would say it was small steps till the big one. And I didn't know how to speak about what I was witnessing from a psychological or manipulative level of what was going on in the world, in the conversations about the pandemic and the conversations about vaccines, that there just wasn't an open dialogue. And I found that to be very troubling, that we were using belonging and shame to make it so, you know, we couldn't just have a conversation. And so I did actually experience my account, Create the Love, getting actually shadow banned, you know, where I didn't break any rules. I hadn't done it. I just used words that you were no longer allowed to use. And all of this was actually causing such an internal conflict for me because I was recognizing that first I'm Canadian. So I thought Canada would never censor speech. It would never do any of these types of things. I now can recognize how naive I have been, you know, which I just felt my integrity bumping up against what was being allowed and what was not. And I felt the relationships around me with people I was very close with throughout my life, there being some friction, just not because I didn't love them or love their perspectives, but because they had been taught that my curiosity was now no longer socially okay. So, you know, we have social norms, and norms are about behaviors that we say socially are allowed and are not allowed. And when someone steps out of that, and I think anyone listening can resonate with the idea of, you know, if you drink or you smoke or you have a job that's 9 to 5, and all of a sudden you start to change what you're doing and start to pursue your dreams or start to say no to something, and not shaming any of those things, but you start to alter your path, the people around you often will be resistant because you're offering a mirror to what has not been chosen yet. And I started at Smart Groves because I felt like the people who had moved with me in the journey of understanding relationship wanted me to stay in that lane. And also, you know, it's important to note too that my financial safety was really living there too.
Yeah, thank you for
So,
saying that. Yes, of course.
yeah, so being able to recognize that my survival on perceptionally was tied to that, which I think for most of us, that's also the thing that keeps us in the relationship or keeps us in the job, because we haven't figured out how to take that leap in trust.
Yes.
Which is a huge, that's a massive leap. And every time I take it, I'm caught. But you know, I have a real strong thought that the universe doesn't show you the net till you leave.
I just posted something about that the other day. I'm so with you on that. Yes.
Yeah, so I started posting kind of no holds barred on It's Mark Groves, posting all the science I was reading, all the things that just to allow people beyond what was only. Because I don't know, in my experience at least, I don't know how anyone could have watched regular news channels and felt that there was balanced coverage. And for me, that was just as someone who worked in the pharma industry for 14 years. And I also taught the course called The Science of Influence. So I was well aware of all the things that were being used to launch the products. Again, it's so important to note, I don't care what people choose. It was just that there was no diverse amount of information that would allow someone to make an informed choice. So I started both of them. All right, I started at Smart Groves. And when people are traumatized, they split. They create a, a survival self, and their authentic self usually kind of goes to sleep or is suppressed or repressed. And so I found myself, really going through the motions on Create the Love. And on In Smart Groves, I felt like I was coming alive more again. And I had access to, in hindsight, being able to say that, hey, like when it comes between my integrity or losing everything, I'm going to choose my integrity. I'm going to choose standing for something. And I think sometimes we have to lose our integrity in order to do that, because I've certainly done that in my past. And as I was saying at the beginning of your question, it was like there became no choice because my body was starting to feel sick. My stomach was feeling sick. I was feeling not brought alive by my work. And I thought to myself, I mean, we go from working a 9 to 5 to then becoming entrepreneurs to then becoming enslaved by something else, by what you're allowed to say and what you're not. It just becomes, again, more codependent dynamics. It becomes more self-silencing. It becomes more self-erasure. And I see that going on so much today, is that there are so many thoughts and feelings that people have that they're afraid to express because they're afraid to, rock the boat in the relationships around them. And I think it's because, we don't recognize the value in the frictions of our relationship. We don't recognize the value in the rocking of the boat. It's the person who is the black sheep of the family who actually heals the family system. It's the person, it's always the silent minority at first that leads to the rising and changing and justice prevailing. And, I think it's important to also self-monitor when one believes that's true and is getting caught up in righteousness and altruism, and toxicity masquerading as altruism. So
Oh, so
again, yeah, like an
good.
important aspect of all of this is humility and the recognition that we all can be captured by ideologies and and not to create the same division we hopefully are all trying to fight. So I found that my two accounts was the actual expression of the division. It was the split. I was trying to unify something I was actually divided within. So I but now I have a really interesting exploration of social media, which I will be testing out with It's Smart Groves. The account still exists, but I have a lot of opinions on social media these days.
Oh, can you give us like the cliff notes? Do share, because there are a lot of people listening that are in the space of being a coach or some sort of a visible
Oh yeah.
leader and guide in these times, right? The best that we all can, choosing to answer the call and honor it with as much reverence and devotion, I guess, as each person is willing. But yeah, so that navigation, those are tricky, tricky waters. And I know that I'm finding where I'm resonating more, feeling really free and liberated myself. And it's on platforms that 98% of my business, as an example, was built. And I know you get it. So there was so much fear of like, what'll happen if I don't play over there as much? Because
Right.
it wasn't serving what I really wanted to share. In fact, a top master, very visible, high profile coach, who was a friend and meant well, said, you got to water down everything you're saying. No one understands what you're talking about. And I knew she meant well, and she was trying to protect me
Yeah.
and the business that I had built, but it was like, no. But I had to consider it for a few hours, and it was like scared to say no, but I knew I had to just stay
Right.
on my path because, like you, there was no other way for me. But yeah, so I'm curious how you're navigating that or what is coming through for you just in current time around social media and that dance.
Well, I think, the recognition that our patterns of self-silencing and really curbing our voice, if we haven't fully healed those codependencies, they'll of course show up in our romantic relationships. That's the magnifying glass. That's what the book Liberated Love is about. It's about taking these frictions, these challenges that we have, whether we're single or in a relationship, and actually creating the container to be able to shift. I mean, big part of the work, which we cover, is actually expanding your capacity in your nervous system for difference. your nervous system for disagreement, your nervous system for holding conflict. You know, the majority of us, if we're people pleasers, and I would argue that most people in healing modalities like coaching and therapy and doctors and just insert healthcare practitioner in any capacity, usually their superpower is derived from their people pleasing from their childhood. So their hypervigilance gave them a superpower. And it's important to note that because as providers of those types of services, which I have a whole business built on the same thing, is that if we are not mindful of our own energetic, that we need people to need us, then we actually create energetic hooks with our clients. And so we actually don't allow them through not healing ourselves fully, we don't allow them to fully not need us. So, you know, that's a big aspect of the self-work, which when I talk about social media, the thing that I'm recognizing is that it very much mirrors, and I'm speaking more specifically to meta-derived ones like Facebook and Instagram. It very much mirrors abusive or narcissistic relationship dynamics. And what I mean by that is, if you look, one, there's a mysterious algorithm that you'll never have the answer to. And as soon as you think you've got it figured out, it changes. So you never know how to fully win. It will give you a bunch of viral success or some to some videos and not to others. So you're getting this intermittent reward system, which is studied, of course, in gambling and things like that. But it's also prevalent in relationship where it's like love bombing, you know? Then you have that, when do I post? What time do I post? It'll never be enough. They will always want more for you, so, from you. So if you're not mindful, you actually end up becoming the conduit for extraction of people's attention. You start to create content that will perform better in order to access more people and, you know, obviously as a business person to monetize and grow your business and grow your income. The other side of it too is that you've also got the that if you say the wrong thing, it can be taken away from you at any time. And I don't mean just you could be deplatformed or shadow banned. You can actually be attacked by a whole group of people because you use the wrong word. And I've experienced that many times in comments where I'm like, man, this is just trigger central. These people are all just trauma bonded and really, and I'm all for making sure your language is appropriate and making sure that you're not harming people. But I really think that and it's really spoken about very well in the book Coddling of the American Mind by Jonathan Haidt and Greg Lukianoff. They talk about how even the sentence words are violence, it makes it so, because words are not literal violence. But those who actually agree with that sentence are actually more likely to be okay with violence in response to words. So we start to see that, and you see this a lot in the conversations on social media, when if there was a criticism or a desire to enter any dialogue about insert the ideology, but let's just stay with the one we've been with, which is COVID. If you were to mention one thing about it, you would get, that's dangerous, you're going to cause harm. So these are inflammatory responses. You could see the same thing would be about the gender conversation. And again, this isn't choosing sides. This is saying that literally the discussion doesn't allow for there to be the exploration. So as soon as someone says, hey, maybe not, whatever, that will cause harm, which is inflammatory to the nervous system. And then we worry that we won't belong. And if you look, what's the strongest way to curb human behavior is to threaten belonging and use shame. So, you know, what I'm now witnessing with social media is that a lot of creators, because they're financially dependent on it, they actually stop being self-expressed and they stop actually standing in the truth of what they really want to say. And they have built a business in someone else's business, which is, in hindsight, because I did it, a really dumb idea. But you only know that in hindsight. And, you know, to be fair, like any tool, social media is incredible. So that's why I don't want to. I met my wife on Instagram. I built a business on it. We're talking because of it. So there's so much to be good, to be grateful for. And like any tool, if we don't actually start to explore our relationship with it, it actually starts to use us, which is a big difference.
Oh, thank you for that. That's beautiful. And so this bridge that I feel is coming through you, there will be some sort of options, right? Solutions, another way of connecting in a unity timeline is the way that I'm really hearing that. And that is a reflection of your own liberation, right? Of you doing your own deep inner work and continuing to be with your edges. And I know that you are very much on that path. And so continuing in the same thread, I wanted to touch on briefly before we move into your most amazing book, Liberated Love, and that process and the beautiful value in it is your recent trip to the Amazon.
Oh,
And
yeah.
right, we have a lot of plant medicine devotees. I very much worked with the sacred plant medicine ayahuasca many, many times. I don't feel the call. I don't know if I'll be called again. The last message was in my last integration, until or if you are called, don't schedule anything. And it was, I was like, got it. You know, I'm still integrating from one particular journey 5 years ago. So
Oh,
very
wow.
curious how that experience has been for you now that you've been home for what, probably 6 weeks or so ish?
No. It's been
4 weeks? Two
yeah, eight
months?
weeks, eight
Oh,
and a
8
half.
weeks. Yeah,
Yeah.
gosh, time flies. Things are so accelerated. Is there anything that wants to come through on that experience and how it's informed even more liberation for you as a human?
Well, that journey in and of itself to Peru was to the jungle. There were so many gifts in actually just being in the jungle with no technology. You
Yes.
know, I'd say that one of the greatest gifts was sitting with other people where there were no devices. So you're kind of reminded, I'm 45, so I was reminded of my childhood. I was reminded of my teen years, where we were all actually sitting around in hammocks singing and like talking, singing 90s or R&B, which is no shock, but and rap music. And there was one guy who used to be in a band, so he had this tremendous voice, and
Oh.
he has daughters, so he was singing Christmas songs, he was singing everything. We didn't get to Baby Beluga, thank God, because that song is now just fucking on repeat in my head.
It Jingle Bells for you? Like all of a
Jingle
sudden,
Bells was my song in the ceremony. Yeah, so for context, I did three journeys, 5 days. The journeys in between each one of the ayahuasca ones was with wild garlic, which is not psychoactive, but works with the plant, with ayahuasca. So you have this, it really heats the body. My first journey was actually pretty gentle. I asked for a gentle introduction to Aya,
Yeah, that's
and
nice. Yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised I got it, as most people I'm sure are know are sure are, I'm sure know there's an excavation that happens. Either you vomit or you poop or you do both, and I was lucky to never have vomited, but the other end was busy, and I
You're letting
the
that
first
shit go.
yeah,
I mean,
and I
I
was like,
had
all right, you
to.
got a call. There was a guy's name named Roger. He would bring you, or if he wasn't available, so you'd hear people in the middle of the ceremony, Roger. So I had to summon on Roger a few
Because were
times.
people incapacitated, and so there was no, like, you just went in like the Moloka space, or was there an actual restroom? Because
There was a
the
bathroom,
jungle is the
yeah. Our
jungle.
rooms. Yeah, our rooms were like bunkhouse, kind of like camp. That's what it felt like. So they would walk you there, which was great. And after I was done that journey, I was coming down and I was thinking, wow, that was, beautiful. I get why people do it. Felt similar to psilocybin. And I was like, I get why people do this, but that wasn't really that tough. But as soon as I said it, I was like, that was probably dumb to say, And then the second ceremony was hard. It was really hard. It was sort of this navigation of, I couldn't figure out if I was navigating against my own shadow or navigating dark entities, which I think because I spoke to so many people about their journeys, a lot of what their journey was became things that I was afraid of within the journey, so I couldn't fully let go in it. So I asked a shaman after that, how do I know when I'm navigating a dark entity versus just shadow that I need to actually let myself be brought towards? And he said, whenever you're afraid, just think of something or someone you love and just think of it, put it in your heart, and everything that's not you will disintegrate. And he said, and sing a song that brings you joy. And the only song I had, it was the end of November, beginning of December. I was like, what song do I know that I could just sing? And it was Jingle Bells. And my buddy Dan, who I'd gone with, and we were there amongst friends, he was laying beside me, and I said, if you hear Jingle Bells during the ceremony, I'm navigating some things. And I started singing it at one point, and I could hear him chuckle. So, but it worked. It did work. Every time I got a bit afraid, I would just sing it, and there, I would be sort of brought out or brought towards what I needed to move towards. I wasn't going to do the last ceremony after the second one, but my wife had given me a journal with a picture of my son and her on it, and she had written, "May your roots grow deep and your wings wide." And I had written a commitment before I did any of the journeys, just saying that I would see this through. And, you know, I was called towards it from the place of that. If I was going to do it, I wanted to do it in a proper way for me. And that was being amongst the people who were the original purveyors of the plant medicine, and really honoring the plant itself. So, you know, we went and harvested it. We went, and then there was a lot of prayer said, and asking its permission. And apparently sometimes it says no. And I gotta tell you, when we did the permission part, I was like, it's okay if you say no. I guess. But yeah, for me, there were people who had really profound experiences, life like transformational ones. For me, I'd probably done so many things up until that point that I didn't feel like I had any deep unresolved traumas or anything like that. But I did have the recognition that, maybe even more so exaggerated during the last 4 years, because, you know, when you're amidst a trying time, you really wish to not be in that trying time. You wish to be through it. And I think during any transformation, that's so relevant, during any change, but it's actually in the trying time that is the medicine. And, you know, that second journey was the hardest one, but it was actually the deepest medicine. The reward on the last one, which was just so beautiful and profound, but it really was the hardest one, that I had this recognition. Like, I try to skip the struggle sometimes. I wish for another moment instead of being in the moment. I forget about myself. I lose my voice when I'm afraid of not being liked, which try having a social media, which all I'm sure everyone listening does. And I really saw that that is this healing of other layers of codependency and people pleasing. It's like, can you hold on to who you are and be in relationship with people? And can you also be discerning about the value of the opinion you're getting? You know, if it's someone with a private profile who doesn't actually get in the ring, or if it's someone with a cat profile picture, you know, it's like all of these, we give so much validity to these people who might not even be people. They're like, I joke that no matter what your wound is, there's a troll for it. Like, there's a bot farm specifically designed to make you shut up. And you could actually post about very specific things that you're passionate about that are sensitive subjects in the world today. And there's literally bots that are paid to go right to the heart of your expression. And I'm now looking at it, which that I think it started to happen before I went to Peru, but it really started to integrate. It's like, now I enjoy it. Now I'm like,
I see
look at,
what's happening
yeah,
here. Yeah,
exactly.
exactly.
Like, test, test, test. I was reading the book, The Next Five Moves, I think it's called, Your Next Five Moves.
I
I
don't know that
forget
book.
the author's name, but he's a business guy. And in it, he said he has a list, or like a poster, of all the worst hater comments he's ever gotten. And he said, I use it as fuel. And I thought, man, that was true when I started speaking about relationships and started teaching. All the people who were like, why don't you stay in the same job? I was a rep in pharma. Why don't you know, you're never going to make it. What are you even thinking? That was always for me, like, watch me, like, please. So it's interesting how we sometimes lose that, especially when we, you know, the more powerful the stance you take in your dreams and your integrity, the more resistance you will face. The deeper commitments you make, the more that will come up. And ultimately, it's really actually inviting you to step more fully into yourself. And if you want to be in a powerful relationship with anybody, you need to be somebody, you know, and that is, there's so many socialization reasons why especially women erase themselves in relationship. And I think, like, what an invitation, like what a gift it is when you have to advocate for yourself. You have to advocate for your needs. You have to step into your power. You have to find your voice. And what a gift that is actually to your partnership. You know, we don't, I think it's wild. It's so fucking wild to me that we do everything we love when we leave the relationship. We do everything we love when we lose something. And I'm like, I discovered that when I worked in oncology, because you'd see these people be given a terminal illness, you know, be given a terminal diagnosis, sorry. And all for a lot of them, the majority of them, the conversations they all needed to have, the passions they were leaving behind, everything became so clear because mortality was clear. And the only difference between, you know, God bless you and I right now, is that, and us and them, is that they are forced to confront mortality, but there's no difference. We have mortality. It's just they actually now have to get right with it. But why not get right with it without that? It's like get right with the truth. One of the principles of liberated love is honor the truth above everything. That's it. And for me, I'm like, I don't want to be in any relationships that require us to pretend or not be tethered to reality. Like, fuck it. I have no interest. If you're going to tell me that like biology doesn't exist anymore, I can still honor someone's experience and love them, but I can't also live in a world where biology doesn't exist anymore. And that to me is, that's not phobic or not caring. It's like, how do we be in both experiences? They exist, both experiences exist. And that's exactly the same as the bridge and the division of any dialogue, you know?
Yeah, so good. Thank you for that. And I remember you doing a recap episode on your podcast about your experience in Peru. And you're talking about the last, I believe it was the last message that you got around, can you show me the next step? Right.
Oh
It
yeah,
was
that
like,
one.
wait, what? Can you share that? Because I was like, oh, that's good.
Oh yeah, that one kicked me right in the soul.
Right.
Yeah, can you show me the next day, the next step? And I
On your
say,
mission, right? It was like very work related,
yeah.
drama related, like, come on, man, I'm working hard here. I'm here. I'm doing everything. Show me.
And then the universe laughs. I made that the intention, and the message I got back was, you don't even do what we tell you now. You don't even do everything we tell you now. Like, you want another plate? You don't, haven't even eaten everything on your plate. And I was like, shit, you know. I sometimes I laugh at the cosmic joke of that, of like, I'll have someone ask me, you know, should I stay or go in my relationship? That's a common exploration. And you know what I find the majority of people do first is they find the answer. They want to find that the answer is anything but what they know. And you know, really, when you expand your capacity in your nervous system, because that's the biological relation to your soul, to your intuition, because you can't really access it if you're in fight, flight, freeze. You know, there's a survival-based importance of your actual literal biology. So if you can expand your capacity in your nervous system and breathe into it, you could start to hear more. You know, I remember Carolyn Mace saying, we ask for a message from God and then we get it and we don't like it, so we pretend we didn't hear it. And
Yeah, oh
that's
my
so
God.
true.
So true. I love her, by the way. And it reminds me of something else that I heard from someone. And it was like, you asked for a sign, I gave you a sign, but then you said, I want a signier sign.
A signier sign. That's so good.
I need a
So
signier
true. We're so afraid of our deepest wisdom, of our
sign.
deepest power. Because if you have to listen to that, it usually requires you to make a decision that actually involves disappointing people or disrupting the identity that you've created. And so something has to die, you know, and there is no birth without death. You know, that's the ironic, but we're such a death phobic culture that we really will avoid any struggle, any suffer, which I say that obviously having done the exact same thing, but it seems like a choice. That's the irony of it all. It seems like a choice, but it's not. I have a friend who's really struggling and whether he should stay or go in a relationship, and he knows the answer. And I said to him, you could take your time, but you've already taken some, like, seriously, a couple years. And I'm like, but there is nothing's free. Like, you now have the awareness. It's now about integration. And it's actually about doing the very thing you're most terrified of, which is disappointing someone. And what a gift your angels are giving you to learn that no one's gonna die.
Thank you
Like,
for
you're
that.
actually okay. But it's that deep of a fear, because it's a child. It's a child. Like, if I stand, if I disappoint, I lose that. It's a beautiful, it comes from such a beautiful place, but
I
it's
call
not
that,
productive as an adult.
well, it doesn't feel like it is, but in fact, it feels like we're being taken 10 steps back, but I look at that contraction now, if honored for its intention of the sacred shadow that it actually is, then it can springboard us forward, right? Into a beautiful evolutionary upward spiral of more awareness, more self-discovery, more self-connection, which ultimately leads to the total liberation
Right, the
of
catalyst.
that because we've integrated and we're no longer afraid of it. Yes.
Yeah, your greatest fear will always come up because it's the thing that will be required to get to any level. You have to break free of the narrative, the story, the identity. They all have to go. And it's so interesting because for some of us, which I'd say it's a continual awakening process, because I thought at 27 I did that when I left an engagement. I thought at 35 I did that when I left pharma. I thought at, 44 when I merged two Instagram accounts, I thought having a kid, but it's not evidence. This is actually something I've been really thinking about recently is a lot of us orient to the things we need to do or grow from the place of it's just more evidence of the things that are not okay with me or what's wrong with me. But it's actually evidence of what's possible for you. That's actually the difference. And one is the way that the punitive child or the punitive parent orients to the child, and the child then internalizes that belief system, which I would say most people do till they don't, because we don't have generally mature adults allowing us to be able to discern for us what our experiences of our life actually mean, that they're not about us personally and our value, but actually circumstances that happen. Like, our parents get divorced and we think it's our fault, and that becomes an internalized belief system. We get put in a, for me, I was in the NICU for 10 days as a baby,
Same.
and
Yeah.
yeah,
At
and that
birth, yeah.
same, and that created a deep fear that the feminine will leave me.
Same.
Yeah, so there's like these deep childhood important experiences that become imprints. And if we can begin, which we have to tease out, but begin to say, oh, this is actually more evidence of my possibility. What? That's so I don't have to shame myself. No, but you do have to listen. That's the other caveat. Like, once you
Deeply
learn
listen
something, you
and
got to change.
discern the listening, right? Because it could be sneakster ego hijacking higher self, right? So it's like, ooh, really getting in there with like the cleanliness and the purity of which lens we are listening from, which is why this work is so important, so that we can discern in that listening.
Amen to that. I think there's so many invitations, I'm sure, for you listening or watching, that you have. And it's like, for me now, I'm recognizing that living in this space of uncertainty is, of course, anxiety and producing for people, like stepping towards a dream or something that's possible. But you can actually cling to the next certain thing. The next certain thing is the next step you're to take. And for me, I'm really, that was a big integration from Peru, was like, I want to know step five or step 10, but I'm not even fully taking step 1.5. It's the, and the more powerful your voice becomes, the more terrifying the steps will be. I remember interviewing Seth Godin, and he said, I asked him about imposter syndrome. And he said, imposter syndrome is just a sign that you're in the right room.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm
Oh,
like,
that's so good. I haven't heard that before. The other thing that's really coming through for me is as this in this field really is the truth of what is happening, which is the emergence of our liberated selves, the liberated love, right? So rather than this is where I've been lately, and I imagine that you are there as well because of what you've just shared, but there's so much focus on shadow integration work, right? Which Some would say, no, that's 5, 6 years ago, but depends on where we get onto this path, right? There's no hierarchy, there's no behind, there's no advance. We're just in it. And so this concept of do we really need to focus on peeling back every layer, right? Every pattern, every label, every identity and ideology. Can we do that and honor it, but simultaneously truly honor the emergence of our truest, most authentic, liberated selves? Because that's what's really happening, but we get so afraid, right? What will people think? Oh gosh, I just did that. And I know I experience that from time to time, but it's in those moments when I'm most scared to leave something up, right? Or to have said that in that conversation. I'm like, wait a second, I need to continue to practice this because it is my truth. And I know my heart is at its highest intention. And so if I can just stand firm in the totality of who I be in this now moment, and let go of what they might think, but be that bridge still in the compassion and in the unity timeline. So it's complex, but we are complex. And we've just been so watered down and so programmed to think that we're just so one-dimensional, right? Can't even hold the capacity to have a conversation that might be opposing viewpoints that we're navigating every single day in any given moment. So I'm not exactly sure if there's a question there, but it's more of what is emerging, what wants to be liberated is really what wants to come through. And as we probably move into talking about the book, but I'll pause if there's anything that wants to come through from you on that.
I think for a lot of people, we delay that. You know, we delay our becoming. So many people stay small to accommodate the relationships they're in, the community they're in. But you're actually not in service of love. When you're doing that, you're not actually in service of your relationship. It's beautiful though, because you get to be a martyr and you get to say, look at all the things I'm doing to keep this system together. It's a child, you know, and that's okay. That's why I say it always has to be a bridge with compassion and understanding and context. But there also has to be an accountability that the adult holds, like a standard that one holds for oneself. And, you know, there's no transformation that doesn't begin without one connecting to the truth of who we actually are and what we actually do and how we engage in relationship and our challenges, et cetera. But also to taking accountability and responsibility. Like no one's coming to save you know, but I think words can remind you that you're worth saving,
Yes.
you know. And,
Yes.
you know, I think one of the most beautiful things I witness in people is when they finally tell the people in their life what they really desire, what they really are afraid of, that, and they claim something. You know, when my friend I was speaking about, when I said, just what is the truth for you? And he said, I gotta go. And I was like, yeah, like, how does that feel? And he was like, oh, like a million pounds, I just now have to share it with the person I love most. And I'm like, that's the work. That's liberation. One of the principles of liberated love is honoring each other's path. You know, I had a mentor once say to me, I was thinking of letting an employee go. And I said to him, you know, I'm not sure. Like, she's fantastic. I love her, but it doesn't feel aligned. And you know, she's got a husband and a mortgage and all the things. And he said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, first off, codependency, right? Showing up there, me trying to protect people. And
People
he
please.
said, how arrogant of you to believe that you know her path than better than what's being called through her and you. And I was like, whoa, God, you know, like,
Feel good.
yeah. And when Kylie and I, because the book is structured with Relationship 1.0, The Sacred Pause, and then Relationship 2.0, we were together for 4 years and there was a real struggle to make it work. We couldn't figure it out. We're both people who are self-reflective, interested. We both teach aspects of relationship. And one of the most beautiful conversations we had was we were standing in the kitchen and I said to her, look, I'm going to create a family and I'm going to create kids, and I want to do it with you. But if you can't or don't want to, that's okay. I love you no matter what you choose. And there was a deep, that was profound in that I was now on the other side of a conversation. I wish someone had said that to me when I was leaving. just like I trust your path, even though it's deviating from mine. Oh my God, that's the deepest work, the deepest work of unconditional love. But oh my gosh, are we so free then to choose our relationships when we recognize that we can leave them and love is still present? Oh, it's our deepest desire. And the real impact of that conversation was that I finally was standing in what I wanted, and I knew that faced with disappointing someone, the person I loved most in the world at that moment, I wouldn't let me go. And that changed everything. It changed everything for me. I left that moment sure that I had my own back, that I could trust myself when, you know, it came to other people's feelings and other people's life path. Of course, I didn't have it all figured out because that then, you know, led to more learnings. But it
You
was a
never
profound
will.
shift.
And then you move into the sacred pause. And I want to talk about that. And then, part two of Liberated Love. And I want to just read also just a bit. I don't remember if it was on the back cover. I just love it. It says, "We embark on a beautiful journey to create the life and love experiences we genuinely want. This realization is incredibly powerful. And the key takeaway is to hold ourselves accountable and true to our desires and values. We shouldn't wait for someone else or the world to provide us with everything we want. We must actively create, claim, and embody it ourselves." And then it talks about how you really delve into telling the truth, creating new patterns, and reclaiming our desires, which was you standing in that moment, embodying liberation against all the fears, all the edges, all of the at birth fears of, right, being abandoned by the feminine. But you chose Mark. You chose you. So I'd love to chat about the sacred pause and then move into what inspired you and Kylie to actually create the book. I was going to say the show. I feel like there's going to be a show. Maybe there is. There's something.
Producers listening. The sacred pause is now, Kylie came up with that name. I think it's what you aptly call the space between when you get back together, although there was no plan to get back together, especially like for me. I can't speak fully for her. But when I was done, I was done. Like I had been in that pattern for long enough. She wasn't the first person I'd been in it with where I was chasing, like, you don't fully choose me. And so I was just done with it. At that point, I was like, there's no going back for me. And I get asked a lot, like, how do I get back together with my ex? How do I? And I'm like, it's not, if you got to go backwards or shrink or get smaller or go back into an old pattern, it's not worth it. It doesn't mean that the triggers won't come up. It's just how you navigate them is expansive rather than contractive. So we, it was in September that we broke up, and we hadn't had a final conversation yet because of travel I had for work. So I got back and I said to her, do you want to do a closing ceremony? Which I'd never done. I don't even know where I got the idea.
How cool is that? Wait, hold up a second though. Can you give us a timeline on this closing ceremony? What year was this?
So this is 2020.
That's what I thought. Okay, year
Wait,
before you began the
this is
writing work.
2019.
Oh,
Sorry.
19. Okay, so even
This is
pre-COVID. Okay, got it.
pre-COVID. Yeah. It's like
Oh,
before
yeah.
Christ and after Christ, before
Good.
COVID and after Christ. It
I
was,
love
yeah,
that. It's
BC.
actually
This is
very real for
BC.
me. Christ consciousness is like everywhere suddenly. More of
Oh,
a
amazing.
mystical interpretation of the teachings. Thank you, Ajashanti, for rocking my world. Have you come across Resurrecting Jesus? Quick segue. I do it sometimes. Have you come across his work, Ajashanti?
No. Oh, Adi Shanti.
Yeah, and
Oh,
Resurrecting
yeah.
Jesus, the Zen Buddhist teacher teaching on his mystical interpretations of the gospels
I love
of the Bible.
Adi Shanti.
Oh, I have a feeling you're going to love this book and listen to it if you feel called on audio because he narrates and just that is a ceremony.
Oh, yeah, I will. I have a
Okay,
credit,
cool.
so I'll pick
But
it
back to
up.
your closing ceremony in 19.
So, yeah, September 2019, I Google closing ceremonies. Have other people done this? This sounds crazy. So, I send a group of questions I sort of put together. And for relevance, during the beginning part of our relationship, we dive a lot deeper into all this, but during the beginning part of our relationship, Kylie had had a dream of a burning house. The burning house represented our relationship, and she was told she had to go. And that was about 8 months into our relationship, 6 months, something like that. So I had talked to her about what felt like her distancing, and she said, "Yeah, I actually had this dream. It's scaring me. I don't want to go anywhere. I love you. I want to choose this." So we spent 3.5 years trying to navigate this fear that she had to go, what's wrong with her that she had to go. And so the ending of our relationship 1.0 was really the recognition that there was nothing wrong with her. She was actually wise. And the fear she had, or the dream she had, was actually informing. And, where she formerly had the "what's wrong with me that I can't choose whatever relationship," it was "what's wrong with, what's right with me that I can't choose this." And that was a beautiful, where I got to honor what was coming up for her. And in the book, we talk about this, that if something's coming up for one partner, it's coming up for both. It's just, she talked about how her body is the somatic canary in the coal mine. So we do the closing ceremony, and we light a fire, and we play music that is meaningful to both of us. We create a playlist, and we actually burn a house, like a burning house. We take a birdhouse, and we put it in, and we share three questions. What is your favorite memory? What are you most grateful about the other person? And then the last one was, what do you hope for the other person? Which was really hard. We were honest. That was hard to access. You're in the midst of like the most beautiful, painful, loving experience I've ever been in. And I left that ceremony different, very different. I now was someone who could leave a relationship and actually make sure that the person in the container was restored and ready for the next person who might embark on her heart. And it really taught us both that love didn't go anywhere, even though our relationship ended. There was just such a deep love for one another, but also an honoring of each other's path. So we didn't talk for a while. So the
What's a
sacred
while?
pause was
What's a
that?
while? What's a while?
Yeah, so the first no contact was 3 months. And then we came back together for like a day, and then we were like, nope, this isn't aligned. In the book, we talk about creating containers, like creating these, because we didn't have guidance of how to create two selves. When you're in a relationship, most people are codependent. Our definition of codependency is ultimately that we source safety and security at the expense from something or someone, at the expense of ourselves, our needs, our wants, our desires. And we traditionally think of codependency from the perspective of Al-Anon, of addiction relation, but that's just one part of it. Self-abandonment and self-erasure, we've been talking about it on social media. It can happen anywhere. When we're afraid to take up space, and what the price could be of taking up space and advocating for ourselves. If no one's ever taught us that or done that, it's a journey that comes through relationships. So we didn't have anyone. We had worked with lots of mentors, but no one really had come up with how do we create a time-bound container that allows two people to develop selves. And so whether if you're single, you can obviously create a container. But we give instructions on how to do that, because of course, for people in relationship, the idea of creating a container can bring up a lot of stuff, which is actually the purpose of it. And
Isn't
so, yeah, so our sacred pause was not intentional, but
Right.
I was deep in, that's when COVID hit too, and I was deep in growth, deep in just moving forward. And I knew that if I found somebody, I wasn't afraid about not finding anyone. That was not even a close fear of mine. All I know I needed was someone who wanted to grow, was curious, had humility, and was willing to take responsibility and accountability. Those to me are like, and had a good sense of humor is pretty helpful. But it's like, that's all you need. If so, we're not trying to find someone who doesn't have triggers, because that doesn't exist. It's someone who's actually curious about growing and taking responsibility for those things. Because there's a lot of people who are like, yeah, that's my trigger, and then they don't change. So she reached out to me after about 8.5, 9 months. And she was like, I would like to have a chat with you, a coffee. So she comes over to our former house, but I was living there. And she says, here's the things I've been doing, and I'm ready to choose this. I'm ready to have kids. I'm ready to build a family with you. But I'd like to create a dating container. And so the container was that we weren't to have any sex, like penetrative sex, because we knew that for both of us, that would probably like
Hook you.
move us out of discernment. Yeah.
Yes.
And for me,
Yes.
I'm very much like how people would maybe traditionally think of women, where they're like all in the relationship without actually considering whether they should be all in. That's me. I'm like,
Yeah, because that's oxytocin,
right.
and many men are very activated by things that happen through the acts of orgasm and release. And yes,
Exactly.
it's a bond that, like, whoo, yeah, I get it. So smart of you to be aware of that.
Well, and I'm also like, I go on a date with someone and we have a connection. Historically, if I was like in, I'm like already in my head, the life is being planned.
Yeah. You've spoken about your attachment style many times, and I'm with you on that. But and it's a beautiful learning, right? Oh, okay, that's the hook, and just seeing it in advance, and then knowing not to put yourselves in those particular situations. So the anxious attachment style, could easily have some, yeah, just a good conversation. Be like, we're getting married, we're getting married, we're getting married.
That's exactly. And I'm like, oh, we're all in. And I was like, oh, no, we're not. Like,
Yeah.
we're not. This container is so that I can maintain discernment. It's at the end of the container that we decide. But we created, like we're not dating other people. We have no conversations with other people. Like, we're both in this.
So let me just pause for a second, if you don't mind. So she expresses her intention, but she's also not committing to the intention before the 3-month container has been honored. Yes, is that correct?
Yeah, so she wants that, desires it, is ready to
Yes.
choose it, but she wants to make sure that in our coming back together, we decide together that we
Yes.
want to make sure it is actually aligned with
And
our
it's really
past.
important for you to have had that awareness for yourself, right? Because you've
Yeah.
had the break and you've done a lot of tremendous deep work. Okay, this is really important. And I want our listeners and viewers to catch this, not just for a romantic relationship. It's any relationship of any kind, and just beginning to become more sovereign and experiencing embodied agency around awareness and choice and preference and patterns and all of that. So I just feel like that's important to say, because I know that we have a lot of women listening, like they're not at that stage of relationship, but it's for any relationship of any kind. Yeah.
Yeah, we should always be checking in. Like, is
Yeah.
this a yes for me? And if it's
Totally.
not, because we could be married for 30 years, it's what would make it one?
Yes.
And am I willing to do what needs to happen to change that? Some people will say no, and you have to honor their no. And I rather than live a life where you are asking that question and the answer is no, and you're just going to stay there because you were taught to stay. Nah, that's the birth of that liberation of I matter. And what
Yes.
was beautiful about that container was it allowed me, who normally was not discerning about where, I chased people who weren't available. So
Of course.
here I was actually learning to not chase, but to also be stay in myself and to share with her, like, I actually don't trust your commitment because you told me for 4 years that you were in and kinda in a burning house and all the things. And she said to me, "You're right. I'm not going anywhere though." And so I kept hearing all the things I always wanted to hear. And she continues to be able to always hear what's going on for me. And she will always say, if there's truth in what I'm saying, she'll say, "Yeah, you're right. Like, I am doing that, or that isn't okay." And so there's a deep level of trust that had to be forged again at the beginning. The container allowed both of us to be discerning and also to come back and be like, okay, is this aligned with our path? Are we meant to be in a romantic relationship? Or are we meant to be friends? And now we have a kid, so the answer is obvious. But relationship 2.0 was about really embodying this. And we wanted to write the book we needed.
Yes.
And in it's really the culmination of everything her and I have both individually and collectively learned for me since I was 27, I started studying relationships to try to understand them myself. And so we go through your relationship blueprint, understanding how your past creates who you are today. We go through attachment styles. One thing that we overlay through the whole book is the understanding of your nervous system. And actually, in order to do anything that's new, you have to be both well-resourced internally, so having skills and practices like meditation, breath work, and then externally resourced, which is about community, which of course, you have in your work. And when you're around other people who can help hold change with you, I think this is the return to the village. This is the return to tribe. This is the return to, we were not meant to do this all alone. I now am a parent and I'm like, I see like a mother with three children, a single mother, and I'm like, how the hell, like, are you doing that? I'm sure there's some support, from family or friends or whatever it might be, but I'm like, we were meant to have, if you look at our history, many people were our parents, many people were trusted, people we could go to. And it's actually the diversity of village that's so important because, I mean, as a kid, I wasn't going to my mom about sex, but I could go. My uncle was funny. I could go to him. He'd tell me, I felt safe to communicate with him about stuff. So, there's a lot of, I feel like this is about like, how do you create, because you bring liberation into your romantic relationships, you start to bring it everywhere. It's like if you were handed baggage, you hand it back up. If you are already a parent and you're afraid you've impacted your children, it's never too late to take your bags back. There's this idea that I've permanently, they got the experience they needed. It's the family tree, and this is this opportunity to heal not just ourselves, our families, but also our communities. Because this is the same action of how do we use conflict to deepen intimacy and connection. I mean, it's, how's it any different than all these conversations we want to have?
It's so beautiful. It reminds me of the work of the nonviolent communication models, especially Dr. Marshall Rosenberg, and both my parents are international facilitators of that particular work. And
Your childhood must have been interesting then.
it was very interesting. I mean, listen, there was all the karma, dharma, patterns playing themselves out. It was really on me to wake up from me thinking that it was supposed to be anything other than what it was, right? And I actually finally let my dad off the hook for all of my manipulation and control and all of my unhealthy dynamics of just staying in the victim of that he didn't love me as much as he loved my sister my whole life up until last summer. And it was interesting. It was when I finally quit the secret smoking at night, because I'd given up all the other things, years ago, even including television, all of it, right? That just felt good to me, and it felt more aligned for my nervous system for sure. Replaced my television with an altar. Imagine, then actually really work with my altar. But it was when I let go of the cigarettes that it was time to reconcile all of the emotions and needs and discomfort of being an adolescent when I started. I had to weave all those threads back in, and it was like a 6 month deep, deep journey.
That
But
would be
the
deep.
beginning of that was recognizing where I was holding my father hostage to something that he never agreed to. Nor ever, just he was just perfect, right? And anyway, it's been a beautiful healing for us. But yeah, I'm not exactly sure where that tangent came from, but I guess it was in the field because relationships of any kind, whether they're our parents, our spouses, our children, our community, our clients, our friends, our ability to relate with one another from being well-resourced, yes, internally and externally, it's everything. And we're watching this play out in the collective, right? Humanity's in a shadow to light moment for sure. And Mother Earth continues to show us and guide us and teach us. And it goes back to that deep listening and then having tools and resources like liberated love. So as we are probably winding down the road of closing out, I just want to ask a couple questions. And it's for anyone who may be curious. We've spoken so much about codependent patterns, but I would love to hear your take. And I know you talk about it in the book of what are some of those patterns that we can just begin to notice and love, right, about our journey so far, but like some major themes just to call to our attention and our awareness of like, oh yeah, that's where I could be more accountable, more responsible in my own relating.
In the book, we have a section on what is liberated love and what is it not, you know? And I think the beauty of it is that, I mean, liberated love is, it's so interesting because the concept of being liberated through relationship seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it? It's just
Well,
like,
it's
of
what we're told in
course
the
I want
Disney
that.
movies and all the books
Right.
that we read when we were little.
So yeah, it's not waiting at the top of a tower to be saved by a guy on a horse, and that guy, it's not, you don't have to put some armor on and get on a horse. Liberated love is not, this is the list we have, which I just want to share. Codependency. It's not trying to control others via emotional manipulation. It's not going along to get along. Feeling like you're not free to leave if you want to, or feeling like you don't have a choice regarding being in the relationship. It's not relying on another human to save you, fix you, or heal you. It's not being afraid to change or grow away from your partner. It's not trying to fix, save, or heal another. It's not the denial of what's really going on. And it's not the contempt for another or yourself, which is treating someone as if they're not powerful, capable, and a whole sovereign being. And it's absolutely not verbal, emotional, physical, mental, spiritual, or sexual abuse. And what it looks like is being able to access real choice in relationships, like being able to actually be free to choose. Because listen, the reality that we almost always avoid till we don't is that your partner, and if you're single, your future partner can leave you at any time. And it's because we have been taught to make these vows that say you can't go. We think that someone saying till death do us part actually means they mean it. And it doesn't mean that they don't mean it, and it's not a deep commitment they're making, but it's that commitment needs to come with the recognition that if things are abusive or not aligned or not, they will likely go. So by recognizing that they can go, you recognize actually the sacred nature of their choice to be with you, which actually makes you probably put in a little more hustle, you know. You know, I think it's Tony Robbins who says, if you want to keep your relationship thriving, do what you did in the beginning.
Yes, all the way through, right?
Yeah, and there's only a few more. Reconnecting to the energy of love and sharing it in ways that serve and honor life in every capacity. Taking responsibility for your life and how you show up in relationship, and a devotion to the truth, and honoring someone else's path alongside your own. And this one I think is one of my favorites, is practicing unconditional positive regard for self and others. To me, that's such a beautiful, I love the words positive regard. It's like there's a deep reverence, like just such a deep sense of respect that you are in the company of another person's heart, their soul, their path. And I think, like, what a thing to be so grateful for, that you get to walk along a path that who knows for how long, you know. But there's this idea that that's not romantic, and I'm like, actually, that's the deepest part of the romance, is to say, what do we do with our relationship to bring you most alive? What is your mission? What are your dreams? How do we use the relationship
Yes, that's my
as a
favorite part of
vehicle?
the book, is we use relationship in order to heal codependent patterns. That is the vehicle.
Right. How else? You know, it's I find we play whack-a-mole with our codependency. You know, we like heal in one area and then all of a sudden it pops up in the other, and we're like, fuck, you
Totally,
know. But
totally. And we're like,
yeah.
what's wrong with me? And it's like, nothing. This is just, I love Rumi. One of Rumi's my favorite poet. And it's like one of my favorite quotes of his is, as you live deeper in the heart, the mirror gets cleaner and clearer.
That's beautiful.
And
Yeah.
then that's when we come back to that unity timeline, which is a complete liberation of anything other than what it is right now, right? And how can I be devotional in my positive regard for this moment, this connection, this presence of this heart, and that's how you feel for me. I want to, as we are wrapping, just thank you for bringing your presence and just your full heart to this conversation. I can feel it, and I'm most grateful. Is there anything else that you would have loved to have been asked or that you would like to share?
Well, first off, thanks for having me. It's
Oh,
just
you're
such
so
a,
welcome.
I'm so grateful, and for you listening to trade your time. to hear us is really such an honor. I don't take it lightly. I mean, my deepest wish is for people that they step fully into their heart, that they answer that call, that they recognize the power that has always been there. And then when you recognize the power that's always been there, you likely will recognize the grief that comes with not having lived it, but don't get swallowed by the grief. It's not, it might bring you into a descent, but that descent is not, that's there for you, you know, and
Yes.
that's why we need people around us so that we feel like we have a tether to what feels like light. But, you know, and I've learned in the last, especially the last 3 years, that it is actually that deepening. And, you know, it's Francis Weller who says that the soul dwells in the darkness. It lives on the edges. And I really, it's amazing that the things that are most painful to us actually end up being the most potent medicine. So that's not to minimize those experiences at all, but to say, like, find someone to walk with you, but walk through it, walk with it, and then bring that medicine to the world. It's such a beautiful gift, as you've done.
Oh, thank you, Mark. What beautiful wisdom. Thank you so much for joining us on Fire and Soul and for sharing your relationship, all the parts in the sacred pause and beyond to help us continue to heal in our own hearts and bring our totality to every moment, every relationship that we are willing to choose in that given moment. Thank you for that.
Thank you for listening to Fire and Soul. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your favorite pod player. And if you'd like to connect on social, you can find me anywhere at Michelle Sorrow. Or if you'd like to reach out to me directly, you can at fireandsoulpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.